We back, y'all. Welcome to the village. It's your man KJ. We are live on this beautiful Sunday morning. Eve Marie, how are you doing, babe?
Awake.
You're awake.
That's where I'm at today.
Yeah, that's where you're at today. I totally get it.
It's a good day.
It is. That's right. It's a beautiful day. Sunday. And, you know, going to do this podcast and just enjoy the rest of our days, get some stuff done, and keep it pushing, y'all. So, village, we got got some topics, got some good ones, got some things to discuss. Village, the very first thing we want to discuss here is the village hero. Eva Marie, you're going to have to give me a few minutes to cook on this one, so to speak.
Okay.
I got something to say, and I've actually had to kind of prepare my thoughts and put them on flashcard, if you will, because I was all over the place with this one. But this is the reason why I chose Chadwick Boseman. Actor who just recently passed away from colon cancer as this week's village hero. So this is why I'm going to say that. Okay. So why Chadwick Boseman is our village hero? Some will ask, why him? The truth of the matter is, he is a hero. Forgive me. The truth of the matter is, for years, being a hero has not been something that people of color have seen. We are often seen as villains, or other things, never the hero. Chadwick showed little boys and girls of color that not only can you be the hero, but you can be powerful, you can be wealthy, and you can be loved. He also showed non-people of color that we can be powerful and still show love to those that do not look like us. Yes, the character of Black Panther was fictional, but we must remember that it is important for all youth, regardless of color, to be able to see themselves as beautiful. It showed America that a Black movie can be successful, entertaining, and educational. For myself, this one movie has opened many doors for people of color and at the same time opened the eyes of non-people of color. I cannot wait for the day, Eva Marie, when I see a Native American as a lead character, when I see an Asian American as a lead powerful character, and so on and so on. Until that day, when every child can not only see themselves as a hero, well, hey, that's what I'm going to be looking forward to. So to Chadwick Boseman, thank you. Rest well, sir. You are the village hero. You showed us so much. We have to thank you. And that's my thoughts. So Eve Marie, that's why I chose Chadwick Boseman as the village hero. You know, like I have on my Black Panther shirt right now. I'm going to tilt just for a quick second. You guys see the Black Panther. We as a society, when this movie first came out, you and I both saw all the ugliness of how people felt about this movie. This movie made billions, and we're literally able to look at this fictional character in a lot of brown children saw themselves. They realized that they don't have to be the villain. They realized they can be the hero. They realized they can be a lot of things. And it just goes to show you that we're not all that damn different. Superman's a hero. Aquaman's a hero. Black Panther is a hero. No matter how you do it, you're a hero. Fictional character, yes, but it's still nice to see someone that looks like you be portrayed as something other than a villain. So I'm thankful. Eve Marie, your thoughts on Chadwick Boseman being this week's villain hero?
I think he was a hero off the screen too.
Yes.
You know, the man fought for years with cancer and went and saw kids in hospitals who had cancer. Mm-hmm. You know, not only are you Black Panther, you've got the horrible deep I've got, and you're still here to see me. Like, that says he was just a good guy. He was mm-hmm. a fighter. He was a good guy.
Yeah.
And he did portray this. You know, they say it's so important for kids to see someone who looks like them, whether it be the color of your skin or the fact you're in a wheelchair or you have the same disability, hair color, you have freckles, you have a birth defect that looks like mine on my face. It's important that they can identify with heroes and adults and people that look like them in these different roles. It's super important, and he did that for so many kids.
Yeah.
And adults, let's just mm-hmm. be honest.
Yeah. I'm almost 40 years old, Eva, and I'm really thinking back to when we've seen such a character like this, like portrayed and being dominant and being yes. strong.
Like, what I really liked about Black Panther was it was his story. It was a story of that particular nation. It wasn't a story where they were part of the nation. It was their nation. And it was their history, and it was what they were deciding to do in the world. And it was very powerful. It was very powerful in what they were doing. You know, there was power in that. And it wasn't just Black Panther. It was every character in the movie.
Was strong
and showed strength and showed courage. And that's so important, you know. Right. You know, because they had the movie itself had a lot of decisions that different characters had to make. Whose side were they going to be on? Who were they going to follow and why? You know, and all of those little intricate things within that movie just made such an impact for so many people. You know, and yes, it's a movie. You know, it's a story, but stories really impact and shape.
Yeah.
You know, stories yeah. really impact and shape. I grew up being told stories. You know, Mom, tell me the story about how you and Dad met. That's an easy one, right?
Right.
As a little kid, frame their future relationship around the story of how their parents met or how their grandparents met, because stories matter. So even if it's a fictional story, it says so much to kids. And this man was amazing. He filmed this entire thing while having colon cancer. It's horrible. Colon cancer is so horrible. And he's like, no, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to make an impact, even while having it. You know?
It's a hero, yeah. man.
He's a hero.
Yeah. You are the village hero. Yeah,
heroes 100%. Wear many different capes.
Right.
Heroes make, just to me, having an impact, a positive impact on your society, makes you a hero.
Yeah. And he will long be remembered for this.
Yeah.
You know, he was an amazing actor. He did a lot of great things. But the fact that he was able to bring a fictional character not only to life, but bring it to life in a way that people saw it as beautiful.
Yeah.
The Black Panther was a huge role, a huge movie for the Black community, for people of color. And like I said, I cannot wait for the day when we as a society, we see Native American as a dominant character, a hero. When we yeah. see an Asian American as a dominant character, a hero, and any other ethnicity, whatever the case may be,
yeah.
I'm waiting to see all of that, and not just like in comic book form, but comic book brought to life. That's what this is really about for me. It's comic brought to life. I am able to take my sons and even our children as a whole and say, this is a hero.
Yeah.
This is the hero.
Yeah.
We're not thugs. We're not degenerates. We're not anything that the media portrays us. We are heroes just like everyone else. We do right just like everyone else. And so, again, Village, Chadwick Boseman, this week's Village hero. I pray his soul is resting well. That's all I can say.
He fought the good fight.
Yeah, he did. He definitely did. All right, Eva Marie, let's hit these next topics, shall we? We got a bunch of topics to discuss, Village. Let's go ahead and jump into this very, very first topic here. So I'm over here trying to pull all this stuff up, you know, and just, it's so many links are pulled up at one time because it just makes it easier for me to do
it
like
that. I'm going to get you a separate device just to scroll through your links, man.
Right. I can totally see that here. All right. So let's talk about something that's super huge. We're kind of going to go a little bit out of order. All right. 39 missing children located in Georgia sex trafficking sting operation. That is huge. This should have been, in my opinion, front page everywhere.
Yes.
39 missing children? This is huge. There are no ifs, ands, or buts about this. This is huge.
Yeah.
I don't care what Trump rally is going on. I don't care what anti-Trump rally is going on. 39 missing children located in a sex trafficking sting. First of all, before I even get into the article, these kids are all going to need therapy, help, and understanding for the rest of their lives.
Oh, yeah.
That is a fact. They are going to need help the remainder of their days. They will struggle with this for the rest of their lives. So let's read a little bit of this here. The U.S. Marshals found 39 missing children in Georgia during a two-week mission called Operation Not Forgotten. The mission, which took place in August, resulted in the rescue of 26 children, the safe location of 13 children, and the arrest of 9 criminal associates in Atlanta and Macon, according to a news release. It was led by the U.S. Marshals Service Missing Child Unit in conjunction with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and state and local authorities. Authorities considered the victims to be some of the most at-risk and challenging cases in the area based on indication of high-risk factors such as victimization of child sex trafficking, child exploitation, sexual abuse, physical abuse, and medical or mental health conditions, according to the news release. Authorities also cleared 26 arrest warrants and filed additional charges for alleged crimes related to sex trafficking, parental kidnapping, registered sex offender violation, drugs and weapons possession, and custodial interference. The message to missing children and their families is that we will never stop looking for you, Director of the Marshals Service, Donald Washington, said in a statement. That is powerful. 30, that's huge.
Yeah, 26 that they took out of situations and 13 that they found and said, okay, you are actually okay.
Mm-hmm.
Know where you're at. You're safe and you're being looked after.
Mm-hmm. That's huge.
To me, 13 or 10 is huge.
Anytime a child is returned back, listen, this hurts my heart, but also makes my heart sing at the same time, right? Because these young children, right? The one thing, my one rule in regards to sexual behavior, my two rules, rather, you never involve children, you never involve animals. Those are my rules. What consenting adults do is none of my concern, none of my business. I just don't care.
Yeah.
Two or more adults, a group of adults, whatever. You never involve a child, you never involve an animal. Those are my rules. That is how I live. If this is your thing, your kink is to do this stuff, whatever. You don't involve kids. And there it is.
Ever.
ever. So, you know, the fact that this director has literally said, Eva Marie, you know, we're not going to forget about you.
Yeah.
And this, to me, this also sends a clear message to these pedophiles, these sickos, these degenerates, that we're not going to forget about these kids. And in the process, we're not going to forget about you. We will find you at some point. And when we find you, we will levy the heaviest penalty that we can possibly levy against you.
Yeah.
It's a sad situation. It sucks for these young kids. It sucks for these families to have to do that. But guess what? These kids are home, or they're going to get help, whatever the case may be. I hope that these kids, I just hope that we can move these children to a place, not just physically, but psychologically, mentally, spiritually, where they can function in a day-to-day thing. I hope we can get to that point. If not, you know, I say we need therapy. If they need it on a day-to-day basis, we have to make sure that all resources are pooled and we go from there. Eva Marie, what are your thoughts about this? Any further thoughts, rather?
They're not forgotten. I remember being a kid and looking at the back milk cartons and asking my parents questions, and I remember my kids looking at the walls of children that were missing. Mom, aren't they going to find them? And I said, we pray every single day that they do. If we see one, we turn it in. You know, so many times people second guess themselves. They see something wrong and they look at it and they question, but they don't question. And so many people are afraid of just speaking up. I would rather be wrong about something that doesn't look quite right than any child be caught up in that. So yeah, you're not forgotten. They're gonna find you. Just keep fighting, you know?
Yeah.
And there's more out there. 39 is a very significant number, but there's hundreds.
If not thousands.
It's still thousands, not just here in the United States. This is a problem everywhere.
Yes.
But
this is a prominent problem everywhere.
In the United States, keep fighting and be careful with your kids.
Mm-hmm.
Know where your kids are. Don't let your kids, I say it like this, your kids are going to get ticked that you want to know where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
I don't give a damn. Know where your kids are at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, teach your young people, male and female, what it looks like to have someone follow them. We want them to be confident that they can go and do whatever they want or need to do, but they need to know, here's some basic safety rules. Know where your kids are at. Have an idea.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, thank goodness they found the ones that they have so far. I hope they continue. I hope this is just the beginning of them finding these young people and bringing them home, or bringing them out, bringing them into a place of healing, bringing them and persecuting these people. I don't want these to be my neighbors. I don't want these to be, I'm just going to say it, my politicians. I don't want people in power of any sort, to do anything. So there it is. I'm glad they found these young people. Big breaking news. I hope every single month those numbers grow.
Mm-hmm.
I hope they're starting to break down some of these criminal organizations that exploit kids.
Yes.
And you know, and if you read through the article, they called it a sex trafficking thing, but it wasn't just that. It was also very high risk profile cases where maybe a parent didn't agree with another parent when it came to like a medical type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, I like the article.
Kidnapped another.
Yeah.
Even those things, we need to know where these kids are.
Right. They're still children. So, they're still children.
We need to know where they're at. I'm glad they found them.
Yeah.
Whether it was a situation they had to take them out of or not, I'm glad they found them. I'm glad they're safe. And I just hope we keep going with it.
Yes. And that's the beauty of this, man. Like, for me, this is this is simply the beginning. This is the
advocate for these kids.
Yes.
Advocate for these kids.
Exactly. Kids
cannot, they can't advocate. I mean, they can advocate for themselves, but their voices aren't heard most days until they're 17.
Yeah, until they hit those 16, 17.
Yeah.
Around that point. Then there are a few outliers where we hear these kids, like the village hero from last week, he was 7 or 8.
Yeah.
But that's few and far in between.
So we can say to, good job, you're doing a great job. But then say this kid has a massive tumor in his body.
Mm-hmm.
His parents are the ones that have medical rights, you know? Most of the time, if a kid, you know, a lot of times the kids just aren't heard. They're not advocated for. We'll listen to them when they're saying all the right things.
Mm-hmm.
But when they're bringing up problems, they're not always listened to. We see a kid acting up in a parking lot, and the kid and the parents having to physically put them in a car. A lot of times, anymore, people look at the other way. Oh, this kid's acting up. Well, no. Maybe that kid is getting snatched out of a Walmart parking lot. Happens every day.
Right.
You know, why is that kid over there crying? You know, oh, I'm not saying that we need to be Karens and point out every parent. I am a parent. I had small children with autism. Let me tell you, the meltdowns sometimes were horrific in stores. But at the same time, just keep your eyes open because you can tell. You can tell the difference.
When something doesn't feel right, go with it.
Something really, truly, not because you're not agreeing with your parents' style, something doesn't feel right. Mm-hmm. Something feels very, very wrong.
Right.
If a child looks very abused or neglected, you gotta say something because they cannot stand up for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Point blank.
If your spidey sense goes off, village, I encourage you to go with it. I would rather be wrong in a situation like that, right? But at the same time, it'll take that one time that you're right, that you're going to be glad you listened to yourself.
Yes.
So it is what it is. I am very much grateful to the Marshalls for what they did. And the director, I think he is, when he says, we will not forget about you, they're going to find these kids at some point, whether it's under his tenure, the next director's tenure, it doesn't matter. This is an ongoing battle, and I pray that it's a very successful one every day. I pray we find more kids every day, even if it's just one child. We find one child that's one less child. And hopefully that one child leads to a group of criminals that can be arrested and prosecuted and put in jail. So there it is.
Yeah.
All righty, Marie, let's move on here to our next topic. And this is one that we had discussed, but I'm also going to throw in a caveat to this. There was a piece that really, you know, it really, oh, we just lost Eva Marie, guys. Give me 1 second to get her back on. So I'm going to just keep on discussing what's going on. We are currently, is that her coming up? Anyways, village, so there was a story that I want to share with you guys, and I am going to share my screen with you guys. Here you go, and there it is. Okay, so DHS is holding migrant children in secret hotel locations and rapidly expelling them. Okay, it's just the Trump's administration's latest blow to the asylum system amid the pandemic. Okay, let's go ahead and read a little bit of this here. The Trump administration is holding unaccompanied migrant children in hotels before rapidly expelling them from the U.S. under a new policy that allows officials to turn away anyone who poses a risk of spreading coronavirus, even if they show no symptoms and are seeking asylum. Now, this for me was an issue, and let's go ahead and bring Eva Marie back on, guys. All right, hey. Right there. Here we go. Okay, so Eva Marie, we're discussing the DHS holding migrant children, blah, blah, blah. This is, man, this is another huge one, right? Okay, so lawyers from the American Civil Liberties Union asked a federal judge in Washington, D.C. on Thursday to temporarily block the administration from enforcing their policy against unaccompanied migrant children nationwide. Instead, immigration officials must transfer the children to the Department of Health and Human Services shelters licensed to administer care to children and allow them to pursue claims for protection in the U.S. with access to a lawyer and a full immigration court hearing, the lawyers argue. I think this is great. This is something that, you know, I get it. Coronavirus is a scare. You don't want to bring in anyone you can potentially think is going to spread it. I understand the logic, right? Even Reed wants to say something. Even Reed, go ahead. I'm sorry, before I continue.
No, I have a rant. This is where I just stand up and I go, hypocrisy at its best. So we have a very majority of our nation, a great populace of our nation and our government and our current administration that says coronavirus isn't that bad. Half the country says coronavirus is a hoax. It only has a 95% rate of us all getting better from it. There's only a 5% chance that anyone could die for it. But then we're taking all these babies and we're telling them, you cannot be granted asylum in the United States because you could possibly bring in coronavirus. The coronavirus is bad. No, that is not anyone's agenda. I'm sure there's a few people that that's their agenda, but that is not your agenda. Your agenda is that you do not want any more immigration from these places into the United States. So you're taking this one thing and you're using it incorrectly. It's either a threat or it's not a threat. There's no gray area when it comes to this. And here's the other part. Test them. Put them with the Department of Children and Families. If you have to put them in a nicely run center, not a cage, not a hotel room secreted away where they're scared, in a health facility, keep them for their 14 days to make sure that they're healthy, treat them if they are not, and then put them with the Department of Human Services and let them have their day. But to look at these kids and say you could be a threat and secret them away and then expel them from the United States with no, they're here. If they're doing this the right way and they're here for asylum, there's a reason for that.
Exactly.
There's a reason for that. Why you cannot use a public health crisis and be on one and one side strongly say these things and the other.
It's frustrating.
It's incredibly frustrating. This is either a public health crisis or it's not. And then use that public health crisis to fuel a previous debate. What? Kind of sense. It doesn't make sense to me. It makes zero sense.
It does.
That's my rant.
It's frustrating to look at this from that perspective because when you look at it and you say, you know, we're and like you said, coronavirus is a hoax, right? We've heard a lot of people say that.
Oh.
And I'll say it like this, both Republican and I've even heard some liberals, progressives say it's a hoax. So it's not just a Republican conservative.
Oh, no.
It's everybody. I've heard both sides, all sides say that. I'm like, well, you know, I disagree because, you know, I know how to listen and I know how to, and I see and I understand, but to now use the coronavirus as a way to, in a sense, push away those seeking asylum. These are young kids. These are kids seeking asylum. These aren't drug dealers and stuff like that. These are children saying, hey, where I'm at in life sucks. Can you help me? I think that's a pretty good move. I understand.
Here's my other point to it. So we're going to applaud all over social media, all over everything. We saved 39 lives.
That's why, right? I did this topic after that would happen.
We saved 39 citizens of the United States, young people, but we're secretly expelling children. And a lot of the places they come from are rampant for child sex trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
And so why are their lives less than these lives? Just because they do not have the title of the United States citizen behind their name? I agree, we can't save everyone. I know that. I'm not so glass over glassy eyed that we can say we've got, you know, but at the same time, they need to have their time in court with someone who actually listens to what they're saying. We need to look at every one of these asylums and say, okay, we can see why you need this. Let's try and find you a place of safety, because they're kids. This is the future generations on this planet,
mm-hmm.
not just the United States, on this planet.
Yep.
We can't say 39 lives matter and these thousands of immigrant children's lives don't matter. No, right. This is not how this works.
Exactly. That is why I brought this up. I am, and here's the other thing, Village. I'm not going to sit here and say that this is just a Trump administration thing. Because the Obama administration also had something similar to this. If you can go and fact check it, I went and looked it up myself. It's a fact check. Obama administration approved, built temporary holding enclosures at southern border. That's a fact.
Yeah,
that's actually a fact. So it didn't start with the Trump administration. It's being glorified, if you will, because a lot of people don't like Trump, right? But it is what it is. But it didn't start with the Trump administration. It started with the Obama administration. So I'm not going to sit up here and say that the Obama administration is innocent of this or the Trump administration is all guilty.
Yeah.
Politics is dirty. It's a dirty, dirty game. Whatever your end game is in politics, you know, you're going to run your hand through some mud, some dirt, some blood. You're going to have to run your hands through all that. So that's just the nature of the business. But the reason why I wanted to discuss 39 children rescued and then we're putting immigrant children in hotels and sending them back, it shows the lack of empathy, in my opinion. It shows that we just don't, we have a heart for certain children. My heart is for everybody. I'm sorry. This is a big country. And we are a very beautiful and great country. I think we can rescue some kids and make sure that they're okay. I think we have an obligation to children to make sure that children are okay.
Yeah, and I'll even say it like this. I don't want more kids. You don't want more kids. But if someone brought a child to me and said, look, it's either you take them or we have to send them back
I'm into taking a horrible the kid.
Situation. I'm gonna have 20 kids.
Right, I gotta figure it out. I gotta figure it out.
Exactly, because every life matters.
Exactly.
Every child's life matters. This is the future of our planet.
Yeah.
Not just the United States, mm-hmm. South America, China, Japan, Germany, you know, wherever they come from.
Mm-hmm. People need to stop looking at it from just a. I don't look at it from the U.S. I see global implications. This is something that I was talked to by my parents, right? What if the cure for cancer is locked in the mind of one of these children who we're sending away?
Yes.
Right? What if the cure for HIV/AIDS is locked in the mind of a child from El Salvador, right? He comes to the States, gets an amazing education, and develops a vaccine, a cure for these diseases. You don't know what these people can, what these young children can do.
No.
You just don't know. Are some of them going to become criminals? Maybe, maybe not, right? But we have kids born and bred in the U.S. who become criminals as well.
Yeah.
Right?
What if these five kids become part of the military operation that stops the war?
Right.
What if this child over here births the child that does this?
Mm-hmm.
Every life. And here's the thing. Maybe that child is kind to every single person they meet for the rest of their life.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to look at these broader implications to what we're doing. No, I am not starry-eyed enough to say that I'm going to be able to save every child. I understand you can't save everyone, but callously just saying, you're gone because you came from a country that has coronavirus. You're gone because you came from a country that has coronavirus. You're gone. Guess what? No one from the United States should be traveling anywhere right now if we go by the criteria, because our country is riddled with coronavirus. There it is. Mm-hmm. We're riddled with this. So right. for coronavirus to be a reason to not give an asylum to a child, no. They deserve their day in court.
Yeah,
they deserve for us to look at their circumstances and what their family was going through and where they're coming from and say yay or nay. I understand some people do not fit under asylum and may have to go back into their circumstances.
Yes.
I get it.
It's a horrible reality.
It's horrible to think, okay, we have to send them back to poverty because it's just poverty and we can't. But if they were being groomed to be taken in for sex trafficking or drug mules, mm-hmm. or
a thousand other horrible things,
by cartels or mm-hmm. any of these things, and that fits under the criteria where we said, yes, you can have asylum in the United States, guess what? They deserve asylum in the United States. And why do I say this? Because I would sure as heck hope if our country got to a place where we needed to go to another country for asylum, people would not look at us and just say, no, we're not going to take you because you're from the United States and you're white-skinned or black-skinned or whatever. Mm-hmm. You soft talk with a Yankee accent or you're from the colonies, so guess what? We're not going to take you. That is bullshit.
It
shouldn't be. You are from South America, so we will not take you because you have this color skin and you speak this way and you come from poverty or you grew up in a country that is very crime-ridden. It doesn't work that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's bullshit. So if we want any other country on this planet to be kind to us, if we are ever in need, we have to be kind to them and people from those places. Point blank.
Yep. And we do have some people watching. So a good friend of mine, Daryl's watching the podcast right now and also our music producer. He said, I put how the Obama administration also did this. And he said, but they didn't separate kids. This is also a fact. This is verified. And being fair, and I said, I just had to be fair. But he responded, being fair is reporting all truths. I'm just reporting everything that I'm reading, and I'm trying to give a balanced thing. The Obama administration created this. They didn't separate kids. The Trump administration, right? It's a different ball game under the Trump administration. That's all I'm saying. It's a different ball game. I personally am going to stand by this. A child's life needs to be reevaluated versus someone who's an adult. All these people trying to come in to this country, they need to be, it needs to be evaluated, looked at, see what we can do, right? Bring me your tired, you're weak, you're weary. That doesn't say bring me your black, your white, your brown, and you're excluded because of that. It doesn't say that. Bring me your tired, you're weak, you're weary. Whether you are black, whether you are Russian, whether you are Native American, whether you are Latino, whatever the case may be, if your life is in danger, I feel that we have an obligation to help. That's just how I feel. And yes, Village, I will take kids in. I have to figure it out. I've often been told and challenged, oh, well, if you feel this way about it, why don't you let them live with you? Okay, cool. If I had a bigger place, I sure the hell would.
We always say we don't want more kids. We're older.
Yeah.
But we understand we're older. But if it means that kid has a good life.
Right. Right. You don't know who this child will become.
I'm going to be 83 with a 14-year-old in my house. That's just who I am.
Right. Like, I'm okay with that. If that's the direction that the Most High has appointed for my life and the direction that my life is going to go, man, I hope I fulfill my destiny before I leave this planet. If that's what it is, there is so much.
Exactly.
There's so much. Anyways, Village, let's move on here to this next topic in the fairness of time and all this other stuff. I'm actually going to throw out this other story. I don't really feel like talking about this one today. It's something that we can just post on the Village Facebook page later, and then we can, you know, get some discussion going and things like that. But this next story here, this is something out of the NFL, Eva Marie. Let's go ahead, and I'm going to screen share with you guys. This is something out of the NFL. Okay, so this right here is Roger Goodell, the NFL commissioner. These doggone pop-ups. Roger Goodell reveals his black nephew gave him a wake-up call about racism in America. So let's read about this here. Another pop-up. Roger Goodell appears to be in the midst of his own personal reckoning, or, according to some, a conveniently timed apology tour when it comes to racism in America. The NFL commissioner appeared on Emmanuel Acho's digital series Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man and shared how both Colin Kaepernick and his own nephew opened his eyes to issues he's long ignored. As for Kaepernick, who was effectively blacklisted from the NFL and still is, for kneeling during the national anthem, and I'm going to say this again, throw this part in here, Village, he learned the kneeling from a Army Ranger. The Army Ranger said, kneel, don't sit. So he took some, okay, I'm not going to go on that rant again. Blacklisted from the NFL for kneeling during the national anthem in protest. Goodell has regrets for the way he and the league treated him these past 4 years. Asked what he would say to Cap if they were having a face-to-face conversation, Goodell replied, the first thing I say is I wish I had listened earlier, Cap, to what you were kneeling about and what you were trying to bring attention to. He added that the league will no longer discipline players explicitly or implicitly for kneeling. We have never disciplined a single player for anything with the national anthem and in violation, and I don't intend to, Goodell said. I will support it. I don't think disciplining them is the right thing to do. I've always said this. You know, I got into, I debate with a person on social media. I've never met him in person, but he and I have talked on video chat and things like that. And I've had to explain to him, this kneeling has nothing to do with this, with the flag. It has nothing to do with that. These protests have nothing to do with the flag. It simply has everything to do with, and again, Village, you guys have to hear me when we say this. Village, we're not saying only Black Lives Matter. We're simply saying we want to matter too. That's it. We fully acknowledge that all lives matter. All lives matter. Everyone matters. Police brutality against anyone, period, is sad. But far, far, we see people of color, to include Latino, Black, Native American, treated differently in the eyes of the law. That is all we're saying. I'm tired of hearing, well, just comply. Well, do you just comply, white America? That's true. Do you just comply? Because we can go to YouTube and see video after video of stuff that I know that I could never get away with because of my black skin. There are things that I'm never going to be able to get away with. And so when people say, when whether they are white, whether they are black, whether they are whatever, Black Lives Matter, we're not saying only Black Lives Matter. We're simply asking you to say, hey, your life matters just as much as mine. That is all. That is all we're looking for. We want to matter just as much as you. I want my two little boys, our two little boys, even Marie, to be able to say, to be able to walk through anywhere and know that they are safe. I want our daughters to be able to walk hand in hand with their little brothers and say, hey, yeah, this is my little brother. Yes, his skin's different than mine, but this is still my little brother, and everything's okay, right? Yeah. I don't want that to be the narrative for my grandchildren. I want this to be nipped in the bud by the time our children start knocking out kids, so I can walk through. Because the truth of the matter is, Village, I'm going to have white grandchildren, and Eva Marie is going to have black or possibly biracial grandchildren. You know, we don't know what's going to happen. We're going to have grandkids that are not going to look like us, right? It could be whatever the case may be, whether they be Black, white, Mexican, whatever, whether one of our children decides to adopt, I want this nipped in the bud. That's what I'm trying to say.
I want to get to a place where, although we're very proud of the skin color of everyone in our family, where they don't say, oh, look at that beautiful blended family. How about look at that beautiful family? Look at just how far we have come, you know? I don't want to say I'm colorblind. I don't want to say that. But I don't want there to be such a big deal that someone's skin color is different. It's a beautiful family. It's not a beautiful blended. Oh, look at this beautiful blended family. Yeah, they're blended. But they're just a beautiful family.
Right.
Looking at people's souls to me, you know, I'm very, very proud that I'm in a relationship with a wonderful man of color who's very proud of who he is and has very beautiful, beautiful children. And he's very proud of, you know, who I am. Look at you over there going, yeah.
I gotta meet this dude.
Pretty sure you look at him every morning in here. But all that said, I just want to be a beautiful family.
Yeah.
You know? I want to get to a point where we don't have to make a big deal. We don't have to make a big deal about this family being blended. We don't have to, because it's just okay. And because I almost feel like we have to fight. We have to fight for the fact we are who we are. And we should not have to, because we're just demons on a planet.
That's it. I am waiting for the day when we no longer say interracial marriage. It's just marriage.
Yeah.
It's not interracial dating. It's just dating.
One race, the human race.
That's it.
One teacher, I cannot remember what her name is, but she said, instead of saying there's Black and Latino and white and, you know, this and that, there's one race, the human race.
Mm-hmm.
One. There may be variations of the human race.
There it is. Variations.
Every color, every gender, every national, you know, but there's one race, the human race.
Mm-hmm.
What did you birth? I birthed children.
That's it. I birthed a child.
You know, I'm a parent to a child. I'm not a parent to a Black child or a white child or a Native American child or an Indian child or an Asian child. I'm a parent to a child. I live in a town with people. Why does it matter if what the color of people are?
Mm-hmm.
Are they good people? Are they doing the right thing? And how can we help each and every one of them? That's my concern. So,
yeah. And I agree. You know, like, this is, I want to live in a society where people look at us and it's not taboo anymore.
Yeah.
Like,
there's a few places here in the United States where it still is very taboo.
Mm-hmm. Or someone thinks it's a fetish thing or something weird. No, it's just love,
man. It's still fetishized. Yeah, ours is, you know, I still meet people that I look at and they're like, I only date, et cetera. And I go,
yeah, I've been told that too. Yeah. I only date Black men.
I just,
and I'm like, oh,
yes,
okay.
Or Black women or whatever. And I'm like, why?
Right.
It doesn't make sense to me. So you're leaving out the possibility of meeting someone that you could really click with based on their color of their skin.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't make sense to me. But getting back to this story, I think I give kudos to anyone who can expand their brain and expand their morals and say, I was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because as you get older, that becomes harder to see a broader spectrum of what life should look like. So I give kudos to this guy for expanding his brain and saying, I was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully at some point he can say that to this man's face, I was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I was wrong.
I was wrong. And I'm sorry.
And I'm sorry.
There it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And for all those that are going to make the argument, well, Colin Kaepernick's numbers weren't good, y'all need to go and look at the numbers. Really look at them. Sorry, I'm not going to go football on y'all. Go look at the numbers for yourselves. All right, so let's move on here, Eve Marie, to this next. This is our final topic, and then we got a couple of village idiots, and we're going to call it a day.
Yeah. I got to go to work.
Got to go to work.
Yeah.
All right. All right, so this is another story out of the NFL. Bruce Arians, he's the Buccaneers, Tampa Bay Buccaneers head coach. Bruce Arians challenges Bucs players to take action. Protesting doesn't do crap. Well, I don't agree with you, sir. Protesting does do stuff. Okay? The Tampa Bay Buccaneers proceeded with training camp on Wednesday when several NFL teams decided not to practice in the aftermath of the police shooting of Jacob Blake in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Bucs coach Bruce Arians told reporters after practice that the team had a meeting before taking the field. When speaking with his players, Arians challenged them to commit to action beyond just engaging in protest if they want to help address societal issues. I understand where he's going with this, but to say protesting doesn't do anything, I don't agree. Your responsibility is to just take action. I don't know that protest is an action, Aaron said, and I disagree. Protesting is an action, right? Protesting has been going on since, right? When early Americans, early settlers threw tea into the harbor, that was protesting, right? Protesting matters. You can do it, it's your right. Aaron said players should identify a cause they want to support and show that support either financially or through other means. How about you do it all? How about you support financially? How about you support by protesting? How about you support by doing what you feel is right? That's simple. You don't get to tell people how to be outraged or angry, right? If a person wants to go out and protest and march and say, this is what, this is here, let's do it. Furthermore, he said, I think each guy has a personal thing. I would beg them to take action, find a cause, and either support it financially or do something to change the situation, Aaron says. Protesting doesn't do crap, in my opinion. I've been seeing it since 1968. Well, just because you don't agree with protesting, there are others who have protested and stuff's gotten done. We protest for civil rights. Guess what? Blacks now have the right to vote. We have the right to own homes. We have the right to own land. We have rights. That happened because of protesting. We protested when we were forced to sit in the back of a bus. We did sit-ins at lunch counters. Guess what? We can sit anywhere we want. We can ride a bus in any seat we want. Guess what? Protesting works. It works. Eve Marie, your thoughts?
I think I am going to say this. Protesting does work, but I think the point he was also trying to make is you can't just protest. Here's the thing. Once you have the ear of the country, you then have to make moves towards, once you have the ear of the country, you have to do more than just protest, which is why protesting in the past has worked. You know, they sat on those lunch counters day in and day out until someone finally said, okay, how can we change this? I think a problem that, or something that could become a problem, is if all you do is protest day in, day out, and once you have the ear of the country, you can't miss those opportunities then to make change. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's exactly what this man was saying, but this is what I will say. You can't get up in arms, and I'm not saying this is explicitly happening, but you can't just get up in arms and go out and protest, and then once you have the ear of the country and they're saying, okay, what can we do? Let's throw some money at this. Let's make some change. Here's your opportunity to make change. And then skip over that opportunity. Because after that, then people start going, all you're doing is complaining. I'm not saying that is happening. I'm saying it is a possibility of happening. And here's why. So if someone is up in arms about something and you go to them and you say, okay, how can I change this? What can I do? And they continue to just be up in arms, you tend to ignore them after that. Well, you're not giving me some explicit instructions on how to help you change this.
Mm-hmm.
You're not putting in some effort to change, to help us change this. You're just being angry about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the problem is so many people see the protesters and they don't see what's going on behind the scenes where we're saying, this is how you can change these things. So I'm hoping that we're just not seeing that this is meant what he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's probably getting angry at the small minority of people who will go out and protest. I'm not going to go to work or I'm not going to do this, that, and the third for 2 weeks in protest of this happening. Mm-hmm. But in that 2 weeks' time, they're not putting into their own communities to change what's going on. Mm-hmm. They're not supporting organizations that help change what's going on. They're not voting. They're just protesting. I think there's a difference between that, because there are people that all they do is get mad. They get mad and then they don't help the progress move forward. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's everybody, right. But I am saying that because sometimes the protesting is so much louder than what's going on behind the scenes that shows, hey, we're protesting, so we're now getting the ear of government. The protesting can seem so much louder and can seem like it's not making change. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there is a small portion of protesting that has turned from protesting to just being angry.
Yeah.
And you have a right to be angry. And I'm not saying you can't be angry. I never want to take away someone's right to be pissed off that people that look like them are dying and being put disproportionately dealt with by the police. I never want to take away that anger. But I think there's a difference between being angry and taking that anger and doing really some things that don't add up, and then taking away the spotlight on what we're angry for. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. I play devil's advocate a whole lot, and sometimes I do look at stuff and I'm like, okay, so this does not add up to this. You can't use any more than we can use coronavirus to expel immigrant children. We can't use the death of someone like George Floyd to go and wreck an RV in Wisconsin and party on top of it. Because mm-hmm. I've seen those videos, and I sit there going, you are not furthering the cause of justice anywhere. You are making a mockery of what people are trying to do to bring justice forward. So that's where I'm going to play devil's advocate with that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that's what this man means. Mm-hmm. That you have to do more than just protest.
Right.
I would hope that's what it means. It's what I would mean.
Right.
But I still think protesting is valid, because at some place we have to get the message up that we're tired, we're angry, we're scared, and you have to listen to us.
Yeah.
So I understand both. I understand where he might be coming from, but mm-hmm. you can't say protesting is not valid.
Yes, that's my only argument.
Yeah, I understand
what he's saying. He's saying do more, but I don't agree with him in saying protesting does not help. And just so we can wrap this up and hit the Village Idiots real quick, my final thought on this is, there's a young lady that both of us know. I no longer talk to her. I'm sure you would know who it is if I said it, but I remember her and I got into a healthy debate, and she basically told me, I was discussing protesting and things of that nature, she told me to get over it. My reply to her was, what am I getting over? Tell me what I'm angry about. So before you tell me to get over it, make sure you understand what I'm angry about. And then let's have the conversation. Let's proceed from there. Don't tell me to get over it if you don't know what it is. It's that simple.
Yes. And then conversation should be, what can I do to physically, financially, emotionally help this to heal? Because here's the thing, I think help this to heal sounds a lot better than get over it.
Exactly.
How can we heal this? How can we heal this? How can we make situations better? Mm-hmm. How can we make things equal?
Right.
What can we do? And I'm going to say it like this too, and it's probably going to make a lot of people mad. It can't just be the police departments that make things better. Because if the police departments come in and they say, okay, we're going to treat everyone equally, we then have to look at our young people and go, stop doing stupid shit.
Yeah, that's across the board.
Because here's the thing, if the police officers do their very utmost best to not racially profile, right? Mm-hmm. And to look at everyone equally. If the same people in communities keep doing the same stupid shit, guess what? It's very hard to say this person's not doing stupid shit and not look at them. If we're going to finally get our government on board, we have to do better with our young people to try and raise them up, and communities raise them up to be better citizens and not do criminal activity. And that is for people of color, people not of darker skin, people of light skin, all people. You know, it's not just a one-way street where we say, well, cops have to do better. No, we have to do better with our young people, so that we don't always have to say, well, you know, he was taken in for drugs last year. We just have to do better. We have to do better. And I've said that a billion times. It's got to be like tenfold within communities, you know, because I can even say that here with folks not of color. Something goes wrong, we all know who to look for in the community that probably did it. You know? So I'm saying the police departments have to do better, but we have to do better with the young people we do have. Okay. I'll say it like that.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that to say that most poor communities of color, they're all these kids are thugs. No, I'm not. Please don't misunderstand me in saying that. Am I saying that for some of these kids there's some higher numbers? Yeah. And so that's what the cops have become used to. And so they automatically go at these kids thinking that they're going to be violent criminals.
Right.
The cops need to get better with that.
But here's the thing. Let me interject here. It's not so much the numbers. It's what is shown. Black kids commit crimes. White kids commit crimes. Everyone commits crimes. It's all about the same. Like, truthfully, it's almost the same numbers. Like, I can almost say, you know, when you really look at it from a numbers for numbers perspective, everybody commits crimes.
No, I'm saying across the board, and I'm saying that for my community as well, that we just have to do better with our young people. We have to give them more opportunities. We have to figure out ways in which we help de-escalate the problem.
Okay.
Because yes, it's a big problem with the movement and brutality for people of color. I'm not discounting that whatsoever. But then I can't discount that there's areas. Right now I'm living in an area that if the police get called to this area, guess what? Most of the time they're ready for a violent crime. And I'm not an area of color. I'm not. I live in white America, right? Mm-hmm. So I think we just have to figure out a way that these communities can help de-escalate the problem. Does that make sense? I'm not saying that it's just a black problem or a white problem. I'm saying it's a problem for poor communities.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In general, you know, these kids that grow up in violence, because there's great kids who grow up in violent communities, and unfortunately, they get treated as though they are going to be violent, mm-hmm. even if they're not.
Right.
So it's you know, police departments definitely have to do better. We have to do better when it comes to how we treat different populaces within the community. That's a no-brainer. But I think in doing better so that we continue to go forward with it, we have to make sure we're doing better with our young people across the board of every ethnicity, so that as we're doing better, it doesn't get revamped. Does that make sense?
It does.
Because there are areas that I've gone to gas stations with you and sat in vehicles and you told me to lock the doors because of what's going on around us. Mm-hmm. In poor areas. And unfortunately, because PTSD is what it is when it comes to our brains and violence and this, that, and the third, from a mental health point and from the point when you do something every single day and you go into an area that's predominantly violent, you act out on predominant violence within that area. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's wrong. It's how the human brain is wired.
Yeah.
So we got to do better within our communities as well.
Okay.
Dude, knock it the hell off and stop doing that. You know?
Okay.
Don't be who society thinks you're supposed to be. Be a good damn person.
Understood. Let's hit this.
No matter what your skin color is.
Let's hit these village idiots and let's get out of here. All right.
Alrighty.
First village idiot, because you was on one.
I was on one. I was. I do that sometimes.
All right. First village idiot. Almost 50 North Texans drank bleach this month. Poison Center warned, stop it. It won't cure COVID. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's going to suck that Clorox cocktail down and hope for the best, huh? That's what we're doing. That's what we're doing. We're sucking down Clorox cocktails now. It's ugly. Following 46 cases of bleach injections in the North Texas Poison Center region since the start of August, experts are again, because we've already had this before, are again warning people that drinking the chemical won't prevent COVID-19. The organization pointed to misleading and inaccurate information circulating online about how to prevent the spread of COVID-19 for an uptick in poisonings. The FDA has long warned that drinking chlorine dioxide products can lead to severe vomiting, severe diarrhea, life-threatening low blood pressure caused by dehydration, and acute liver failure. But you can potentially reduce potential spread of the coronavirus by cleaning and disinfecting frequently touched surfaces such as tables, doorknobs, light switches, handles, desks, toilets, faucets, and sinks with bleach. So, in conclusion, village, this village idiot right here, this one, it's good to clean with bleach. It's good.
But not your insides.
But it's just not good to clean your insides. Cool? Can we go ahead and put that one to rest?
And yet again, I'm going to say it. COVID-19 is just a conspiracy from the government.
Mm-hmm.
But people are drinking bleach because they're scared of it.
Yay. All right. Let me see if I can get this
last. People won't wear masks. Masks would seem easier. Wear my little mask. Wipe that down some surfaces.
There you go. All right. Share screen. Last one and we're going to get out of here. And this one is not so much a village idiot, but a slow clap. Like, Missouri lawmakers passed bill making it legal to give guns to kids without parents' permission. Slow clap for Missouri.
Babe, I think Chicago looks better for next date night. Legal to give guns to kids without parents. Okay, so legal to give guns to kids is my first and foremost.
Right. So the GOP...
without the parents' permission is almost like an oxymoron.
The GOP-controlled Missouri House on Tuesday advanced a bill that would make it legal to give guns to children without their parents' permission. The bill comes after Governor Mike Parson, Republican, called lawmakers back for a special summer session on crime and asked the legislature to penalize criminals who unlawfully use firearms, then pass them off on children to avoid detection. The legislation. So basically, what they're saying is, in a nutshell, let me just get this here. The adult does the crime with the gun. So to keep the adult from getting busted with the gun, they're handing it over to a child. And they
So they're trying to make it to where the kids can get away with having the gun, so they're not getting prosecuted for the gun,
mm-hmm.
but the adult will, but they don't want the kids to get prosecuted with the gun for a crime they didn't commit. I'm confused.
It's very confusing. I read this one, I said, I'm gonna run it past you, because for me, when I read this, I said, okay, this seems like adult commits crime, child gets handed gun, now you can't charge the adult?
On Tuesday, the state house voted to toss out the existing law and only make it a felony to give firearms to minors if the intent is to avoid arrest or criminal investigation. I still think it should be a crime to give a firearm to a minor without their parents' permission. Why are we giving? Here's the thing: I know plenty of kids who hunt. That's not a thing for me. If a child is being taught, has hours on the gun range to learn how to hunt, that makes sense. If our country ever goes to war and we have to give a child a gun to protect themselves, that makes sense. If a child picks up a gun to protect themselves and knows how to fire it, that makes sense. But for someone to recklessly just hand a child a gun doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. We're gonna slow clap it for Missouri to with all this and keep it pushing. Who's your village idiot?
I'm sorry, it's a tie.
Yep, both. It's a tie. That's exactly what I said. I said this is a tie for me this week.
Bleach Drinkers of America unite. Missouri, you gotta figure out your stuff and quit dating your cousin. What the heck? And I'm from Missouri. You gotta understand, I'm from Missouri. I'm sorry, Village. That was wrong. But as a native of Missourian,
yeah, it's tough.
I understand what they're trying to do, but they've got to word this better. They've got to.
All right, Eva Marie, let's wrap this up here.
Girls out of work.
Right. All right. So let's go ahead. I'm trying to pull up Evernote apps or the Evernote and read the show notes. I don't have them printed out. Save space. All right, Village. So, excuse me. If you guys want to get a hold of us, please do so on Twitter. I am at Enlighten My Mind. I also handle the Village Twitter handle at W2TheVillage. I also had Eva Marie's Twitter handle is at Muse Chaotic. That's at MuseKaotic. We can be heard through Stitcher Radio, iTunes, Podomatic, Spotify, Tumblr, YouTube, and LinkedIn by searching for me, Kevin Johnson. Instagram is Welcome to the Village, all one word. The Facebook page is Welcome to the Village with the number 2. Google voicemail phone number is 619-387-8125. And Village, just so you guys know, we're going to be bringing back the second helping. You're going to get a random show, middle of the day, maybe 15 to 25 minutes, talking about whatever. Yeah. And just talking about something, and then we're going to jump off, and there it is. So, Eva Marie, thank you. Great show.
Of course.
Village, as the saying goes, we love you. We thank you. God bless you. Have a great day. Bye, everybody.
Have a great day.